All righty. Good morning, Coastsiders. It's February 3rd. It's the 3rd. It is 2023. Time for some coastal windage. I'm Reuben Truthmaker, and this is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, the Coastside's very own live call-in talk radio show. This is our call-in talk radio show. It's not a nationally syndicated show. This is Coastside Strong, baby. Okay, we're airing every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. right here on KHMB Radio, 100.9 FM and rockin' 1710 a.m. and streaming live on KHMBRadio.com. Coastside issues, hot topics, and you, and me, and Frank the engineer, and that's us. And yes, and the interns, they always want to get in on it. We don't have enough time to list everybody in the room, so I always skip them. But Frank is looking right at me, so I need to give him a nod. All right, and you, thanks for listening this morning. It's 9:01 here on Main Street in Half Moon Bay. Let's get right into today's topics because we've got a really, really exciting show today, okay? Puma problems, catamount concerns, mountain lion mishaps. That's one of our topics today. Another topic for today, heroic ocean rescue at Poplar Beach. I know you haven't heard about it. That's a curious point of the story in itself, but we'll discuss that amazing, amazing scene. And to help us understand it better, we are going to have one of the heroes of that ocean rescue. In our Shooting the Breeze live interview, we're going to have California State Park lifeguard and hero Riley Rhodes will be on the show. We look forward to hearing from Riley. Okay, Coastsiders, this is your opportunity to hear about and discuss local issues with other local people. And here's the best part. This is a chance for you to add your 2 cents worth to the discussion. All right, so pitch in and give a call. Go ahead, do it. It's all right. We'll be gentle. 650-560-9851 is the number to call to be on the air with me and our fellow listeners. Or send us an email at coastalwindage@gmail.com. And as I mentioned, we're live streaming on the internet right now, so you can go to khmbradio.com. And click the Listen Live link at the top right of the page, and you will be listening to Coastal Windage right now, anywhere in the world with an internet connection. Okay, if you missed the show, this morning, or you heard about it somewhere else, oh, they had a great interview this morning or a great segment, you can download podcasts of our past shows by going to khmbradio.com and clicking the Show Podcasts tab. Listeners to the show will know that I often reference past shows so that listeners can go back and listen to those shows and hear what we had to say about those topics. And I will do that several times today as well. All right. So again, you can go to khmbradio.com, click the Show Podcast tab, search for Coastal Windage, and then search for the date of the show that you're interested in. All right. Speaking of searching and interest, and these actually have nothing to do with it, but I needed a segue. Cameron's Pub and Restaurant is our sponsor, our show sponsor. We really appreciate that. Coastal Windage brought to you by Cameron's Pub and Restaurant, a true English pub with so many beers on tap. I would take the rest of the show on tap and in bottles. I would take the rest of the show to list them out. I think I spent a couple of evenings there where I maybe tried to get to all of them. Yeah, it's a little fuzzy once you get to about somewhere into the teens, but that's fine. Call yourself a cab or an Uber or your friend or your spouse and get a ride home, please. Right? Get a ride home. Cameron's is an incredible place to go. Really fun. I mentioned last week and probably every week, I love stuff and lots of stuff, and I love looking at stuff. If you go into the garage of my house, it's got all kinds of stuff on the walls. Paper stuff, physical objects tacked to the wall, because I love the variety of life and seeing a lot of stuff. And that is Cameron's in a nutshell. You go in there, there's lots of rooms, there's big booths, there's long tables. Every room has stuff all over the walls to look at. Every room is usually crowded with people, okay? Great grub, fish and chips, clam chowder, outdoor doggy dining patio, open 7 days a week. I mean, what is there not to love? All right, karaoke, open mic. Did I mention clam chowder? Yes. Well, I'm mentioning it now. Okay, do it. check out Cameron's, and Cameron, really appreciate sponsoring the show. All right. And that Cameron's is down at the south end of town, right? Really? Right at the south end of Main Street on your way out to Smithfield, okay? All right, let's look at the air quality report. Again, everybody else gives you traffic and weather, but we give you the quality of the air you breathe so you can know whether you're going to go do that 12-mile run today or not. Frank, you doing a 12-mile run today? Really? Yeah. Okay. Oh, Frank said 20. All right. That explains the short satin shorts you're wearing there, Frank. Those are nice. Okay. That's a little too much leg, Frank. All right. Here we go. Let's remember the scale. 0 to 50 is incredible. 51 to 100, pretty good. Over 100, not as good. Not so good. And as frequently happens, if I could... We need to get our Foley artist is still out, Frank. Where is this person? The Norway? Okay, we need to get our Foley person back because I need like a drum roll for this. Today in El Granada. Oh, there it is. Thank you. Zero in El Granada. Zero in Half Moon Bay. Folks, zero is literally the best air quality you can measure. 10 today in Redwood City. 8 in Santa Cruz. And in honor of our guest... interview guest today, Riley Rhodes. The air quality in Monterey, California today is 5. And just for laughs and giggles, I checked out the air quality in Monterey, Mexico, and it is 103. All right. Okay, beauty on the coastside. You know, one of the reasons we love living here, right, is it's so amazingly beautiful almost every day, even on a day like this. And one of the things that makes it beautiful this time of year is those beautiful fields of yellow flowers that pop up. Now, this is curious. Like the field right below the high school, right there at the corner of Lewis Foster and Main Street and Highway 1. I mean, that field right now is just going off. You know, you see people literally like screeching to a halt in their cars by the side of the road and hopping out and running into the field so they can take one of those pictures of them like sitting down in a field of flowers. I'm pretty sure this is not a commercial crop of flowers. This is just some kind of either invasive or native wildflower. And I was trying to find out what is the name of this flower. A lot of people on their Pinterest, Instagram, I don't know what they're called. Whatever, their social media stuff, they're calling it wild mustard weed. I'm not sure that's right. Maybe I'm wrong. I checked with a couple of people that I know on the coast side that are very familiar with botany and plants and stuff, and they didn't actually know either for sure. I grew up in Southern California. We had a plant that I had to weed in our yard all the time called mustard weed. That really, literally, I believe, was mustard weed, little tiny flowers with some seeds. These are more like, so these flowers and the leaves that are with them don't remind me of the wild mustard weed that I grew up with in Southern California. Maybe it's a different species of it. I don't know. But it could be Oxalis pescaprae. Yes, thank you. That's my Latin. A.K.A. Bermuda buttercup. Buttercup Oxalis, English weed or sourgrass. Or some kind of yellow buttercup. Not sure. If anybody knows, please give me a call. Let me know. Like North County San Diego, which is a different part of the county that I grew up in, but still in San Diego County. Like that area of San Diego County, the coastside used to have a large flower-growing industry. But like North County San Diego, which is now the fields have... the crop that they grow in North County San Diego now is called housing. Yes, all of the field, all of the poinsettia fields when I was growing up in the beautiful flower fields, it's all paved over and it's all housing now. All right, but here on the coast side, fortunately, we haven't gone to that level yet, but a lot of the flower greenhouses and the flower industry has transitioned to cannabis or other crops. There's still a couple of commercial flower fields left. There's one, if you go out Parisima Creek Road, as you're going out to Parisima Redwoods Park there, and you pass UC Elkis Ranch, about a mile up from there, there's an old farmhouse set back from the road on the right, and... periodically during the year, there's a couple of fields around that farmhouse that will grow, that are growing flowers of different colors. And that's always really beautiful to see when I ride my bike on that road. Okay. And that is part of the coastside beauty that we love so much. Another part of the coastside beauty that we love so much is our community and the people that live here. And last week was really hard. The coastside continues to heal from the mass shooting of last Monday. Last week we had a special 2-hour memorial edition of Coastal Windage. If you want to listen to that, we had several notable callers, including our U.S. Representative Anna Eshoo, Supervisor Ray Muller, Half Moon Bay Mayor Deborah Penrose, Half Moon Bay City Manager Matthew Chittister, and a few other folks that were so gracious to call in. Okay, and we've got our first call of the morning today. This is Ruben Truthmaker. Who am I speaking with this morning?
This is Matt over in Arleta Park. About the flowers?
Yeah, hi, Matt. Yes, I think you called last week or the week before, right?
Week before, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are not mustard, yellow mustard. Yellow mustard grows quite a lot around here, wild mustard, but it's a little darker and a duller shade of yellow.
Right.
What these are is wild sorrel.
What's it called again, Matt?
Wild sorrel.
Wild sorrel, okay.
S-O-R-R-E-L.
Yep.
Which is a very, you can actually eat it, it's edible, and it's a kind of a sour, we used to call it sour clover when we were kids down the East Coast, but, and it's true, it just takes over like that, and it gives you this gorgeous carpet for a week or 10 days in the spring here. And it really is becoming a kind of a destination for people coming over to Half Moon Bay. Funny to see.
Yeah, I think that's driven by social media. Everybody wants a picture of them sitting in a field of flowers, and then they can put it up on their, like they said, their Pinterest or whatever they're doing, you know?
That's really a sorrel.
Matt, we're going to have to get you a paycheck. You're like our adjunct field reporter now. Thank you so much for bringing the info.
I live to serve. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. All right, already a great call this morning. Thanks to Matt for that. And so, wild sorrel is the answer. I knew it wasn't mustard weed. I knew it wasn't. All right. And so I feel good about that. You know what else I feel good about was the things that happened this past week in terms of the coastside trying to heal from the tragedy. Last Friday night, there was an incredible public vigil at Mac Dutra Park at Kelly and Main. Again, Kelly and Main, the beating heart of Half Moon Bay and the coastside, and there were so many people out there. It was moving, right? It was definitely moving, and it reinforced that our community, regardless of what's going on in the state or the country or the world, we're here. We are here for each other, and it felt right, okay? And then this past Tuesday at the Lion's Den, a.k.a. the Event Center on Kelly, there was a non-denominational service. And, you know, it was somber. It's hard, right? It's a memorial service. But a lot of people turned out for that. And they had a choir there and a band. And it was nice, right? We need these things. But the story doesn't end there, right? We move on, and there's still survivors, witnesses, others who need help, in addition to the farm workers who have come out of the story as, you know, a light has been shined on that situation. So if you're interested in helping out, you can still do so. You can donate to the HMB Strong Fund, which is being administered by ALAS. You can donate directly to ALAS. You can donate to Coastside Hope. These are organizations that are directly going to help farm workers. Okay, we have Station General Manager Jim Henderson has a great interview with Judith Guerrero of Coastside Hope on this week's episode of Radio Magazine right here on KHMB. So you might go to the KHMBRadio.com website and check out this week's Radio Magazine with Jim Henderson and hear what Judith Guerrero has to say. Okay, so issues that came out were, of course, farm worker living and working conditions, mental health issues, and gun laws and gun mentality. Now, listeners to the show, everybody just unclench for a second while I get into this topic, including people at the Half Moon Bay Review. Listeners of the show should know that I love the Half Moon Bay Review. I am deeply beholden to the tradition and the information that a nonpartisan, document of record provides for a community, especially a small community like ours that doesn't have any other type of regular, to kind of quote unquote, traditional media. Okay, but I was really disappointed on Tuesday, the day after the shooting, alongside articles about the shooting in their web banners, the Review was running ads for a company called Libertarian Country, was the name of the clothing company, depicting clothing showing guns and pro-gun slogans, including one ad that showed an Asian woman wearing a shirt with a picture of an AR-15 assault rifle and the slogan, "Nobody needs an AR-15? Well, nobody needs a whiny little B-word, yet here you are." And I just found that that was really, really tone-deaf and frankly tasteless. And at any time, let alone the day after this incident, let alone being run next to articles about the shooting. Now, I've complained to editor Clay Lambert at the Review about the Half Moon Bay Review's banner ads in the past because they've run, frankly, extremely partisan ads for companies that provide extremely partisan clothing, you know, with bumper stickers and slogans that are extremely partisan. And I've said to Clay Lambert at the Review, I don't think our community needs that. And he has told me before that this is not an editorial issue. It's not in his hands. It's a business issue. And he said that again when I emailed him on Tuesday about these banner ads. He said they are remnant ads and the Review has very little control of them other than to turn off their ad platform completely or complain about each instance, which the Review has done repeatedly. He acknowledged what I said and said he would forward the complaint to the business side of the Review. I accept that. Like I said, I love the Review. I really respect Clay. I've known Clay for 20 years. He's a good man and good for this community, and I believe him. But the business side, the Second Amendment argument, not the right time to discuss it. But at some point, our thoughts and prayers lose their credibility when we continue to refuse to address core problems with our society. Ah, whatever. Hey, look at this cool TikTok video in my feed, Frank. All right, let's move on. All right, Highway 92 update real quick. Yes, two-way traffic once again. Man, feels good, doesn't it? The original sinkhole on the west side of Skyline has been filled, but now they got to work on the long-term fix. The erosion point on the east side of Skyline has been repaired-ish. But now there's a third erosion point on the eastbound lane near the base of the straightaway going up the hill from the Christmas tree farm, kind of right across from the old Lombardi Spring pipe, if old-timers know where that is. These are all temp fixes, though, temporary fixes. There's no timeline yet for a complete repair, and I'm just wondering how this is going to be. Are we just going to, like, duct tape and you know, put some Bondo on this road and leave it? Or are we actually, you know, because to do a full-scale repair, especially on that original sinkhole, I think that's a lot of work. Okay. Speaking of which, last night there was a Coastside Infrastructure panel discussion, part of the Half Moon Bay Brewing Company Brews and Views series about Coastside Infrastructure at the Mavericks House in Princeton. District 3 Supervisor Ray Muller was there, Puente Executive Director Rita Mancera, ALAS Founder Belinda Hernandez-Arriaga, and San Mateo County Department of Emergency Management David Cosgrave was there. Okay, discussion about the future and current state of Coastside Infrastructure, and I guess a review or preview of Supervisor Muller's plans for developing a Coastside Resilient Infrastructure Plan. The event was moderated by Lenny Mendonca, former Chief Economic and Business Advisor for the State of California, founder of the Half Moon Bay Brewing Company, and director and founding chair of the Coastside News Group. We had Lenny on our show as a Shooting the Breeze live interview on May 11th, 2018. Maybe we need to have him back on and ask him about this ad platform situation at the Review. All right. I know we had bad weather over the last month, and I appreciate the work by Caltrans, County DPW, and City of Half Moon Bay to address the damage. But really, folks, the coastside infrastructure is in horrific shape, especially in the unincorporated Midcoast. Obispo Road, where they built the new fire station but didn't do anything to the road, they got a nice new sidewalk that goes nowhere and a big old parking lot and a beautiful new building, and Obispo Road is barely drivable. It's dangerous. People are walking along the side of it. There's humongous potholes. Cars have to swerve in the oncoming lane to avoid these potholes. It's really embarrassing. The Coronado intersection right there is also terrible. All through El Granada, the roads are in terrible shape with all kinds of seams and cuts and potholes and craters from the PG&E work. Highway 1 from the harbor down to Half Moon Bay, there's two lanes where it goes to two lanes after Frenchman's Creek. Though there's like a huge seam between the two lanes that is opening up into giant potholes because of all the traffic there. When's the last time that road was paved? I mean, come on. Deferred maintenance and low prioritization. All right, the Half Moon Bay Library has a teen focus, which is nice. The Coastside Leadership Academy has a series of talks that they're presenting at the library. CLA founders Claire Reitman-Grout and Lindsay Stewart have been hosting a speaker series for parents and teens at the library. Last month, they had Let's Talk About Rest. And on February 8th at 6:30 p.m., their talk is called Let's Talk About Emotions. And on March 15th at 6:30 p.m., Let's Talk About Technology. We really should check out those talks and hear interviews with these two amazing educators from our Shooting the Breeze live interviews. We interviewed them both on May 27, 2022, and then again to check in on them after their first term, semester with Coastside Leadership Academy on December 9th, 2022. Also at the library, tomorrow there's a public speaking contest, I guess. I heard about this through the Half Moon Bay campus news videos, but there's nothing on the Half Moon Bay High School website, nothing on the Half Moon Bay Library website, so I had to do some calling around. That's what we do. Oh, did I say me? Yeah, I know. The intern, somebody just threw a pencil at me. All right, I had one of the interns do it, but I'm the host, so I take credit for stuff. That's how it... I'm getting a dirty... No, that's how it works. Right. You're paying your dues, and I'm collecting the dues. Yes. Okay, thank you. All right, so we did the research and found out that this is an American Association of University Women sponsored event called the Speech Trek Competition. It's going to be in the community room. Half Moon Bay High School students Alex Sardella and Natalie Handel will speak on the topic, how can communities, organizations, and citizens of all ages help protect and expand voting rights? Both students are from John Kerry's 10th grade English class. This event is organized by Speech Trek coordinator Mary Vargas, and contestants have been coached by AAUW member Antoinette Rubel. All right, four city and community members will serve as judges. No word on who those people are or how they were chosen. No, I was not asked. Probably a good call. The first place winner will receive $150, the runner-up $100, and the winner will move on to the state semifinal competition. Public is invited to attend. Check it out. Side note, did you know you can't call the Half Moon Bay Library directly? It's really inconvenient. I would just like to call down to my local library instead of having to go through the San Mateo County Library phone tree. But thank you to Liz Garcia at the Half Moon Bay Library, who called me back and gave me called us. I see you over there. Liz called us back, called Coastal Windage back, and gave us the info about this. Okay. Update, there's a new date for the State of the Coastside Address. This was postponed from January 25th. The new date is Wednesday, February 8th. Crystalline Geet, Coastside Chamber CEO, and representatives from around the Coastside will participate in an interactive discussion about the upcoming happenings that impact the Coastside. So in addition to Sophia Lane from CUSD, James Pruitt from the Harbor District, Joan Dentler from Senator Josh Becker's office, Greg Diegues, chair of the MCC, Deborah Penrose, mayor of the city of Half Moon Bay, Rita Abdel Malik, assemblymember Mark Berman's office, Crystalline, she got the big fish. She got a supervisor, Ray Muller, is going to be there as well. Nice job, Crystalline. By the way. Crystalline is the Coastside Chamber CEO. She is the perfect person to run the Coastside Chamber of Commerce. She's just such a energetic, bright, positive person. And this is an indication of her personality. For her email signature, she lists herself as CEO, Chief Executive Optimist. Now, for some people, that may be a stretch, maybe even a level 7 eye roll, but it is so true about Crystalline. Hats off to Crystalline. Nice get on. She had to really work hard to get Supervisor Mueller's schedule worked out, and she did. All right, say yes to the dress. It's that time of season, the annual collection drive and giveaway for high school students who need a dress for the prom. Donations are being accepted until Friday, February 10th. Three different locations around town, including Half Moon Bay Pilates in Moss Beach and Inkspell Books. The giveaway event is scheduled for Saturday, February 11th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Mariners Church, 100 Stone Pine Road. Open to any high school student who needs a dress. This event is the brainchild of Lily Keaton and Jenny Urban, who started it in 2019. We are big fans of the event here at Coastal Windage, and you can hear our Shooting the Breeze live interviews with Jenny Urban from January 11th, 2019, or Lily Keaton from January 17th, 2020. Again, go to khbradio.com, click the show podcast tab, look for Coastal Windage. And finally, before we get to our segments, which this is going to be a speed read, Frank, right? The segment, we're sailing. We're going to need to do another two-hour show. Are we going to need to make this a permanent two-hour show? Oh, everybody wants to be paid for 2 hours now? All right, well, then we'll keep it at one. All right, there's a new barbershop in town. If you are looking for a fresh cut, and I mean the freshest of cuts, Half Moon Blends is a new barbershop at 650 Kelly Avenue next to Mac Dutcher Park in the location of the old laundromat. Okay, owner and barber extraordinaire Luis Haro is a true master and has brought his craft to the heart of downtown Half Moon Bay. Right now, cuts are by appointment only, but walk-ins will soon be available. For an appointment, call or text 650-416-4590 or Instagram l.barberharo, H-A-R-O. When you visit the shop, be sure to check out the killer overhead lighting. Okay, let's get right into our topics. Puma problems. A puma is a mountain lion, in case you didn't know, which I didn't. I thought it was a shoe brand. There was a dead mountain lion on Highway 1 in Moss Beach. I think it was Monday. There's a picture of it on Nextdoor, and it was shocking and heartbreaking. It was laying in the middle of the road. I mean, these lions are incredible to see, but to see one dead in the road is just, you know, you're used to seeing a skunk or raccoon, but a mountain lion in the road, that's just, that's a hit. If you find a mountain lion carcass, you can report that to CalTIP 1-888-334-CALTIP. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife collects the bodies for for archival and study. All right, I don't even know how to pronounce that word. Kind of a autopsy type thing. I personally feel kind of a surge of panic anytime I see any kind of dead animal these days, but especially apex species, because there's just not enough animals and wildlife left. It feels to me like every individual animal is critical to the health of the species, and in particular, our local mountain lion population is in danger of not having enough individuals to be genetically viable. So now, and in addition to the one in Moss Beach, that was the second one in a week. Two dead mountain lions on Highway 1 in a week. So we're down two lions and possibly a third, because this past week there was a mountain lion attack on Tanitas Creek Road. A five-year-old boy was knocked down and bitten by a mountain lion cub, receiving lacerations and an orbital fracture. That was the boy received that, not the mountain lion. Fish and Wildlife investigators say they will use DNA from the child's clothing and injuries to search for the lion. And if they find the lion, they will catch it and it will be removed from the wild. And I'm asking, to where and why? I mean, that's where it lives. I mean, this was kind of a one-off incident, as we'll get to in a minute. The Bay Area Puma Project reported that it had been watching a female and two cubs in the area for several months, and staff believes that one of the cubs in the family attacked the boy. Now, this animal's a cub and was probably either playing or trying to put into practice the hunting techniques its mother is undoubtedly teaching it right now. I'm sympathetic to the victim, but before everybody freaks out about the great mountain lion invasion, please note this is an extremely rural area near a water source. The event occurred after dark at 7 p.m. I mean, that's puma time. Where else are the pumas supposed to live? I mean, humans are going everywhere. These animals require a large area to roam in to be healthy. I personally stopped doing solo night rides, mountain bike rides, when I found a dead deer carcass with claw marks right on Old San Pedro Mountain Road. Folks, mountain lion attacks are extremely rare. Only 20 confirmed attacks in California in the last 100 years. Okay, we profiled the local mountain lion community, the Puma Project, and local mountain lion interactions on our February 8, 2019 show. Check that out. Per Nextdoor, warning, per Nextdoor, Smithfield Park, this is somebody posted this on Nextdoor, so take it with a grain of salt. Smithfield Park has a 190-pound female mountain lion with two cubs that has been seen laying in the field during the days by the dog park for the last several weeks. So keep your eyes and ears out for that. All right, the heroic ocean rescue. I know you haven't heard about it. Nobody has. I don't understand that, but okay. Last two Sundays ago on January 22nd, there was a dramatic and heroic ocean rescue off the shores of Poplar Beach in Half Moon Bay. I'm piecing this together from a single Nextdoor post that was then commented on by several eyewitnesses. I am amazed by this story, and that's why we wanted to get one of the participants, Riley Rhodes, on the show, and she'll be calling in a few minutes, and we'll get her firsthand account. But from what I can piece together from the single Nextdoor post, since there is literally no media reporting of this at all, not just at the review, but anywhere. After hearing reports of a swimmer swept out to sea, two California State Park lifeguards, Riley Rhodes and Max Hunter, both locals, responded, got a fix on the swimmer's position from the bluff tops, put on their swim fins, and entered the water at dusk in an attempt to rescue this lone swimmer. Now, king tides were in effect. They weren't at full high tide, but some big waves. A lone swimmer at dusk? I mean, how do you even... Yeah, okay, you can find them from the bluff tops. Once you get in the water, how can you find a single lone swimmer? Reports are that one of the rescue swimmers was not even wearing a wetsuit. We'll check on that. The swimmers were in the water for an hour. An hour. And at some point, the sheriff's department is repeatedly calling the swimmers back, but they were out of touch themselves for 30 minutes. There was a point where it was feared that all three would be lost. And then, like something out of the movies, the two rescue swimmers emerged from the surf with their rescuee. Can you imagine standing on the beach and you see these two swimmers go in? I mean, I would just be agog at that. Like, oh my God, the bravery, the confidence in yourself that you're going to enter the ocean at dark and try to find somebody out there and have the strength to keep swimming around with just swim fins, I think. We'll ask Riley what kind of equipment they took with them. Just it's mind-boggling. And then to come and then to like walk out of the surf successful after half an hour being out of contact and people were worried that they would be lost. I'm without words. And there's still no mention of the story in the Half Moon Bay Review or other news outlets, though right now the review has a lengthy article on Coast Guard helicopters that was published Wednesday and two stories about a man pulled into the surf in Pacifica 2 weeks ago. So I'm surprised about this, and as I do, poor Clay, I emailed Clay Lambert at the review to ask him. He said he's aware of the story and is working on it, but as of today, still no story in the review or anywhere else. Now, here at Coastal Windage, we've covered numerous ocean tragedies on this show, including the terrible loss of Arune Pruthi in January of 2021. You can hear our discussion about Arune on our January 22nd, 2021 show. And we've also covered steps taken to improve ocean safety on the coast side. On our May 28, 2021 show, we discussed the new life-saving stations in the harbor and at Surfers Beach. And on our January 22nd, 2021 show, we also interviewed local Samaritan Carl Rupelius, who was raising money to install warning signs for the beaches with messages like, "Never turn your back on the ocean." Okay, we have some emails. I think Riley's going to call in any minute, so rather than read the emails right now, I'm going to tell you a story of total knuckleheadedness that I did when I was young, when I didn't have enough respect for the ocean and what it can do. And I am telling this story because who was the swimmer that was going swimming at dusk in king tides by themselves? You know, that's not a smart move. You should not go swimming in the ocean by yourself. Just bottom line. Okay, so when I was a senior in college, way back, before cell phones or immediate communications, anything like this, a friend and I went to an overnight... and here we go. I'm saved from my knucklehead story. That was nice. All right, this is Ruben Truthmaker on Coastal Windage. Who we got on the phone this morning?
Hi, this is Riley Rhodes.
Riley Rhodes. We've got you on a live phone interview. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this morning. And I wish you were here because, like I said, I would love to shake your hand and just give you my personal congratulations and thanks for an act of incredible heroism. And I'm going to guess you're gonna say, oh, you know, that's all in the course of duty. But really, it's amazing. So let's get right into it, okay? Well, Riley, nowhere else can we hear about this. So, do you mind talking about the incident?
So, just a timeline. We had just wrapped up our day, and it was probably around like 5:30, 5:40, and we were all kind of just cleaning up at the office and getting ready to go home. Because we get off at 6 usually. And we had heard a fire dispatch of a water rescue at Poplar State Beach. So one of our guards, Miles Dickey, as well as Max Hunter, jumped in the first truck, and then I went in the second truck. And we went lights and sirens to Poplar State Beach. And once we got there, Coastside Fire was there, as well as San Mateo County Sheriff. And we had made contact with the reporting party, which was the parents of the victim who had been swept out. And so we had talked to the reporting party, and they had confirmed that he was in the water, because that's one of our criteria, is that we need to know that this victim is in the water. Kind of looked through the binoculars, and no one could really see him at all. And my partner, Max Hunter, was looking through the binoculars and saw his head probably about like 300 yards out or so. So we did get in wetsuits this time, which is good.
Okay, hold on, Riley. So both of the rescue swimmers, you and Max, were the two rescue swimmers, right?
Yes.
And you both were wearing wetsuits.
Yeah.
Okay, this is why it's good to get it firsthand. You were both wearing wetsuits. That's good to know. Okay.
Yeah, it's very important for us to wear wetsuits, especially if it was dark and as well as the victim was pretty far out. So
yeah,
it's kind of all that you make within yourself is, you know, if you can handle it without a wetsuit. But obviously in this case, definitely wetsuits.
Yes.
So we did get eyes on the victim, which were good because, you know, everyone was a little panicked about that. And so we grabbed our buoy and fin because the swell was pretty big.
Riley, could I jump in? So you had swim fins, wetsuit, and then when you say buoy, those are those kind of smaller, like orange or red flotation devices?
Yeah.
Not a rescue board though, just a smaller flotation device.
Yeah, we do have rescue boards, but it's kind of up to the rescuer of whether or not they want to use that equipment. I mean, I think in our opinion, the waves were really big. It was super low tide, because we had that king tide, so you know, down in the negative tide. So it is kind of hard to get a board out there, because a lot of the waves were closing out. There wasn't really a direct entry that we could make with a rescue board. So we decided to swim, and our buoy kind of like goes across our chest, and then we put our fins on in the water. So we ran down to the water edge to make our entry, and we kind of lost sight of him as soon as we put down the binoculars, just because the swell lines were really large, and it was getting a little dark. So it was kind of a, not necessarily a blind entry. Like, we knew that he was straight out from the point that we were swimming out. But there was a lot of water moving around. So it was a little bit scary because we did lose sight of him.
Let me ask you that, because that's one of the questions that, to me, is the number one question in my mind. It's dark. A swimmer's in distress. I know this is, you're trained for this, and but you get into the water. The waves are big. Once you're at level, you know, surface level, I'm sure you can't see 300 yards out there anymore. It's getting dark. Were you scared for yourself? I mean, scared that you would not find the swimmer. I appreciate that. But, I mean, was there any fear for your own safety? And, I mean, it's just the ocean's so big. It's dark. It's cold.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was a little bit scared for sure. But we do like a lot of training, especially in bigger surf for these particular situations where it is big and the tide is really low and it is heavy out there, to make us feel more comfortable when we are in that situation. And I mean, every one of my coworkers is an amazing waterman, you know, in the ocean multiple times a week. And I think that really helps us prepare for these situations, whether that's we're surfing or swimming. I think it just really helps us feel a lot more comfortable when we do have to face kind of crazy conditions. Because the ocean is never going to be a predictable place.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are constantly pushing our limits and getting out of our comfort zone, in the ocean, like I said, whether that's surfing or swimming, it really can prepare us for these situations. But I mean, I definitely felt a little bit of fear as far as not being able to find him. I think that was like mostly my concern, because you do get a little bit of kind of like tunnel vision where you're like, okay, like this is what I'm doing and like I want to get it done, you know?
So you, so you were out there. Once you enter the water, you lose sight. I mean, how did you, so a couple questions to that. So you kind of got a general bead on him before you left the shore, but once you got in the water, you can't see the person anymore. And since they were swept out, maybe that, you know, they're not straight out from shore. So how did you know where to look? And two, did you ever start to lose hope or become worried that you wouldn't find, how long were you in the water before you really started to feel like, uh-oh, this isn't going to happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. We swam out past, you know, the breaking waves, and we definitely took some bigger stuff on the head. And, you know, me and Max did a great job of staying together. Because we knew that it was dark, and you know, the last thing that we want is for us to get separated with so much water moving around and not really being able to see each other. So we did a really great job of staying together through all the breaking waves.
I'm sorry, Riley. Do you have any like little flashers or lights attached to your buoy or to your wetsuit or anything? Because I hadn't really thought of that the two of you need to stay. Even keeping the two of you together in those conditions would have been hard. Did you have any flashers or anything for people on the shore to be able to keep track of you, or you to keep track of each other?
We did at that specific scene. We didn't have any lights or anything. I think you know, it's definitely a good form of equipment, but it's just something that we didn't necessarily have at the time.
Sure.
So when we swam out past the break, and we were kind of on the outside, and we grouped up a little bit, and you know, we couldn't see this guy at all, and so there definitely was a little bit of panic in that situation, because you know, it's a matter of whether we got out there fast enough, or you know, it's just down to minutes at that point. Because you don't know the situation, you don't know the victim's swimming ability, or you know if the victim was injured at all. So yeah, it was definitely a little scary when we got out there, and we still couldn't see him. But then we heard his voice. We heard him yelling for help, and that was just, I mean, it sounds kind of bad to say, but that was a really good feeling, because you're like, okay, this guy, you know, he's able to yell for help. He's somewhere out there, but like, we can kind of follow his voice.
Did that give you an extra burst of energy? Because probably at this point you're out there for half an hour. I mean, you're amazing swimmers, but you're probably getting a little tired yourself and also emotionally drained. And so did that give you a lift of energy when you heard that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. When we heard him, it was like, you know, just start swimming towards his voice. You know, we were kind of calling back to each other because none of us could see each other over the swell line still. So we kind of knew that he was somewhere even farther out from where we were at that point. So we were kind of calling back and forth to each other. And then we saw his head. And that was a really good feeling to know that, you know, he was okay. So, and then we approached him and asked him if, you know, he was hurt, and buoyed him up, put the buoy around his arms. And definitely a good feeling getting to him.
So Riley, I read again in the social media account that people on the shore, first responders on the shore, that you were out of touch with them for over a half an hour, and that led me to ask, well, did you have radios with you? Were you in communication with the shore at some point, and then you lost communication for a period of time?
Yeah, so we don't have any necessarily like waterproof radios that we take out with us. So normally if this were to happen in the daytime, we could rely solely on hand signals from our coworker on the beach. So they would kind of give us hand signals to direct us to the victim if the victim was as far out as he was. But because it was dark, we didn't really have that. And honestly, I didn't really know that we were out of touch with them. I thought that they saw us make contact with the victim, but they didn't see us make contact with the victim at all, because it had ended up getting too dark at that point.
Let me just recap for our listeners. So, because when I'm saying like this is one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard in terms of a real life thing happening in our community. At dark, king tides, swimmer hundreds of yards out, no lights, no direct communication. You're out there for almost an hour. I mean, it's... I cannot describe how impressed I am with you and Max, the bravery and the skill and the ability, and also how calmly you're relating the story. I'd be running around town, you know, trying to get all the free beers I could at every bar. Like, I'm a legend now. You're a legend, Riley. Okay, I know you're humble. I know. Let's continue on. Okay, so you got to the person. Were they cooperative, non-responsive, panicked? How, you know, you see these, you know, movie accounts, or I guess dramatic recreations of events where the swimmers, or you learn this in first aid, they're panicking, they're grabbing at you, they're pulling you down. How was this person when you got to them?
So we swam up to him, and kind of a general rule with rescuing someone is you don't really know how they're going to act. So it's kind of about keeping a distance to them. So we do kind of hand them the buoy, because, you know, at that point it's a risk to us. If the victim was panicked and, you know, wanted to grab onto us for flotation, that can happen. So we kind of kept a safe distance from him and, you know, handed in the buoy. And, you know, once I realized that he, you know, the victim was pretty cooperative, he was a little bit, you know, panicked and nervous, because, I mean, he had been out there for a very long time. Mm. So, yeah, I would definitely say definitely panicking a little bit, but he was, I think, just really happy to see us.
Yeah.
And, he knew how to swim, I guess. And that just goes to show, you know, how powerful the ocean can be, even if you are a good swimmer. you know, if you don't know much about how the ocean works, it can turn bad really fast. You know, you can be a collegiate swimmer and still have, you know, that problem of the ocean constantly humbling you. So I just thought that really goes to show just how powerful it can be.
Again, adding to the legend of this story and your legend of, like, yeah, exactly, how powerful the ocean can be and the courage that it takes to go out there and do what you did. So you got to you got the buoy on the person, and maybe he calmed down a little bit. And so then how long did it take you to get back to shore? Was that a long trip back where you had to rest often, or was it like, okay, all three of you were like, now it's time to get home?
Yeah. So we actually started swimming. So we were pretty far out from shore at that point. And we do run a lot of calls with Polar Point Harbor Patrol. So they're usually always there on most of our rescues on their boat. So we kind of made the decision that we were closer to the boat than we were to shore. So we did initially start swimming towards the Harbor Patrol boat, but after realizing kind of how dark it was, and I guess just that, you know, it would be pretty unlikely for them to spot us in that moment, because we were kind of thinking that we can just kind of load the victim on the boat, and then, you know, just take them to the harbor from there.
Yeah.
But, you know, after swimming for a little bit, we did kind of realize that, just how dark it was and that they probably wouldn't be able to see us. So then we kind of made the decision to just swim to shore at that point. So we kind of started swimming to shore and we're reassuring the victim, you know, multiple times. You know, I think I was being a little honest with him, you know, just because it was pretty big out there. And I was like, you know, we are going to take some waves on the head, but, like, don't worry, like, we got you. I think reassurance is always really helpful in those situations, because obviously the victim was a little scared to be out there. But, you know, I just kept reassuring him, there's two people here that, you know what they're doing, and, you know, we'll get you in. So, yeah, we definitely took some big waves on the head. We were trying to time it a little bit because it was really long period swell that day. But it was a little hard to time it, considering it was dark and, you know, we were on the outside of the breaking waves rather than sitting on the beach. So we kind of swam through a lot of white water, and, you know, we held on to him as much as we could. And and then we got to beach. We kind of got pushed in mostly because of, like, how much flotation that we had. And especially since the tide was so low, there wasn't a lot of water to go under. So we did kind of get pushed in a little bit, but once we got to the beach, it was a really good feeling. And, you know, I had Max go and get everybody, because, you know, at that point I did kind of realize that they probably hadn't seen us in a really long time, because I wasn't really focused on how dark it was. And, like, so when we got to the beach, it was definitely a really good feeling.
I can imagine. You mentioned the term waterman, and recently in town we had a film festival, and the movie Waterman was screened there about the great Hawaiian swimmer and surfer Duke Kahanamoku, who, in a similar situation, is credited with saving 8 people from a sinking ship off Corona del Mar in 1925. He was there surfing with his friends, and he saw this ship go down, and he jumped in with his surfboard and used it to ferry survivors back, which is credited as the first time anybody ever used a surfboard for life-saving purposes. And it further cemented his legend as a kind of a heroic figure and a waterman. And that's what you and Max are now, Riley. You've entered that same status with this incredible thing. Let me ask you this. Now, almost 2 weeks later, right? What are your thoughts about this event? Do you consider yourself a hero?
You know, I think that's definitely a hard question. I kind of see it as me just, like, being really happy, you know, that nothing went wrong, I guess. that, you know, everything did go right because, you know, there are situations where we don't get the outcome that we got a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm just mostly, you know, just really proud of Max, too, because, you know, he's a first-year guard. Like, this is his first year ever being a State Parks lifeguard. So I think it was just I was just feeling really proud of him for sure because, I mean, that's huge to have that be – you know, your first rescue.
Yeah, right.
And you know, spend a lot of time, you know, kind of training them. And, you know, I did the same thing, you know, where I had to go through my first year and, you know, all the other guards, you know, we definitely push each other a lot and, you know, are hard on each other at points. But, you know, I think that all really pays off when you see, you know, one of our first year guards doing something so incredible at that rescue was.
Well, I think hopefully you will think of yourself more as a hero as time goes on. I mean, that's classic hero right there, right? You had a job to do. You did your job. That's what you're trained for. I mean, again, like your status just continues to grow, Riley, you and Max as well. Let me ask you this. Well, I'll save a couple of these questions for later, because let's get into what you were talking about. Okay, so you grew up here on the coast side, right?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in Montero.
And you swam as a kid. I think the interns have slid me a couple of pieces of paper that said that you were on, like, the Mavericks swim team, and you did competitions as a kid, and you were on the Half Moon Bay High School swim team, right?
Yeah, I did all of those.
Now, Riley, I remember an article. I mean, again, like, if we go back and look at the life of Riley Rhodes, it's going to be pretty impressive. I remember an article in the Review from about, I'm going to say 2019. I'm not sure when you graduated. I think it was this year, with a picture of four Half Moon Bay High School female athletes sitting at a table in the gym on signing day.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know any of the people in the picture at that time, but it was a powerful image that the Half Moon Bay Review photographer had captured that I think made all Coastsider proud. These four female athletes sitting at the table with huge smiles on their faces, wearing the gear of the schools that they were committing to, and you were one of those athletes, right?
Yeah. I originally committed to Fresno State for swimming, but I ended up not pursuing that in college, you know, just because I did do it for a really long time, and I did kind of want to focus on school, and I did start lifeguarding and kind of found a new passion in my life. I it was a great opportunity to take swimming to the next level, but, you know, I'd done it for a really long time, and I was a little burnt out on competitive swimming for sure.
No doubt. Did you did you participate in the Junior Guards program while you were a youth?
Yeah, I did Junior Guards, I think, when I was seven or eight, all the way till I was like 13 or 14. So I did it for a really long time, and I absolutely loved it. I think it's the best program, and it's really surreal, like, teaching it now. Just because I looked up to all the guards when I was younger, and then becoming one of them and, you know, teaching these kids about ocean safety and having a lot of fun while doing it. It's the best feeling ever.
My son has done it for 3 years, and I totally concur with everything you say. It is an incredible program. It's not a day camp. It's a training program where kids really learn the skills and knowledge about the ocean that they need. And the other thing that makes it great are the instructors, right? Are you an instructor for Junior Guards?
Yeah, we all of our employees are instructors throughout all the sessions. It's a lot of fun, and, you know, we put in a lot of effort. You know, we're there like an hour or two before the day starts, you know, building all the obstacle courses, and, you know, it's really fun, and especially since a lot of our employees, you know, we all grew up together, so it's a lot of fun, you know, being with, you know, your best friends and, you know, teaching all these kids. It's really truly the best, and our program for this year starts June 5th and July 10th.
Oh yeah, my son's doing it again this year. Probably he's 15 now, so he's getting to the towards the end. But
got it,
Riley. I would. We're at the top of the hour, which we normally end the show, but I can't get enough. Can you stick around for maybe 5 more minutes?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, let me do my station ID here, and then we'll get right back to some more questions. This is 100.9 FM KHMVLP Half Moon Bay, California. All right, and we're back. We're doing a live interview with Riley Rhodes, California State Parks lifeguard, rescue swimmer, hero, and lifesaver. And we're talking about the incident that occurred a couple of weeks ago where she and her partner, Max Hunter, swam out over 300 yards into heavy surf at dusk to rescue a lone swimmer who had been washed out to sea and brought that person back safely. And we've been talking to Riley about this incident. One thing I wanted to check with and get your thoughts on, why do you think this story hasn't gotten any media attention? This seems like a humongous story.
I'm not really too sure about that. You know, at the end of the day, I think it's not really what it's all about. You know, I think it's more, you know, that, you know, a person was saved that day. And I think most of my coworkers can agree that, you know, I think a lot of lifeguarding that happens all over the coast does go unnoticed. And we're fine with that. You know, I think it is definitely a, you know, something that does really go unnoticed. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, it really is all about, you know, us being as strong as we are. And, you know, I think we're okay with that.
I mean, I wouldn't expect you to say anything else, Riley, because you've shown through your actions, through your dedication to public service, and in this interview today that you are an exemplary person, a true hero, and someone that we can all look up to. And so that's why I felt like it was important to tell this story, because I want people to know that there are folks like you that are, you know, in times when our society feels cynical or depressed or whatever, that there are great stories and great people out there protecting us even when we don't hear about it or know about it. And so I just feel that you and Max and the California State Parks Lifeguards crew deserves that attention. And I wanted to ask you, so are you going to CSU Monterey?
Yeah, I'm at a CSUMB right now. This is my third year of college currently.
And what are you studying? You mentioned that you kind of moved away from the competitive swimming to focus on school. What are your career plans?
I'm currently studying environmental science, technology, and policy here. And I really do enjoy it a lot. Definitely a lot of pretty hard science classes, but you know, it's something that I really like to do. But yeah, I mean, I think Monterey has a lot of great opportunity as far as our research, scuba diving, and, you know, they have a really, really good marine science and environmental science program. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity that they kind of point us in the right direction in. But I really haven't thought a lot about what exactly I want to do with environmental science yet. But I will get there. But I definitely have taken a lot of interest in being a first responder, whether that be, you know, being EMT or, you know, anything like that. I think I really do like to be in that environment. So that's definitely an option as well.
Well, let me put this in your head, Riley. Let me put this in your head. It's something to think about for your future. You know, as you pursue your career in environmental science or marine biology, that you consider becoming a public speaker about becoming a public speaker, but not just on lifeguarding and water safety, although I wanted to ask you some questions about ocean safety, which you are an expert on. But as a role model for everybody, but especially I would say for possibly kids, teens, and girls in particular, of this heroic story, this the strength that it requires, the training that it requires, the mental strength that it requires. These are things that, I mean, there could be not only a benefit to the society, but a benefit to yourself as a career. You know, you see all these conferences at the, you know, the sports arena or whatever, where people are coming and speaking about, you know, improving their lives or being, you know, self-help things. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about really like going to schools, going around to organizations and showing them like everything that can be great about our society and a person. And I just, I want to put that in your mind to think about as something that you could pursue in the future, because this is, you sound like an incredible person, and this, and that is evidenced by what happened a couple of weeks ago. So, just, you know, something to think about, because it's an impressive story. And I think a lot of teens out there, especially girls, would take a lot of strength from your story and from you. Let me ask you this. What lessons do you think co-siders and others can learn from this event with regard to ocean safety?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we did have a really high swinging tides that day, and that can kind of create really dangerous conditions all along the coast side, no matter what beach you're at, because water is retreating so fast that, you know, rip currents are firing up. You can really just see all the rips that form when the tide is going down from such a high tide to in the negatives. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of co-siders kind of know the general rule for spotting rip currents, but, you know, they'll usually be, waves won't be breaking in them. They'll be a little discolored. It kind of, you know, it's like a, you know, a river out to sea. And that can be really dangerous for people that, don't really understand, how or what rip currents are. And they can be a useful tool for surfers and watermen. But, you know, if you don't really know, anything about the ocean, they can be really dangerous really fast. And to get out of them, you know, we swim parallel to shore. And you can get out that way. Because you don't want to swim directly into a rip current. It's like swimming upstream. You're not really going to get very far, and you're just going to exhaust yourself.
Right.
And also kind of keeping up with conditions. If you are coming to the beach, definitely check the wave size. You can do that via Surfline. You know, there are a lot of platforms for checking swell size. And, you know, with really high tides and big swell, there's not a lot of beach at all. So I think it would be really important for tourists to definitely check that, because you don't want to be on the beach when water is coming all the way up to the bluff. You know, there's really no point. And that can turn dangerous really fast. You know, you can get swept off your feet. So yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely about checking conditions before you're coming to the beach or before you're getting in the water. And we're always around town in those big white trucks with the skate park logo on them.
Yep.
So feel free to, you know, come contact us and, you know, ask, is it safe to get in the water? Is it safe for us to be walking on the beach? You know, we have people do that all the time. And it definitely, you know, we love those people because they are being cautious. And, you know, especially if you have small children with you or you don't have a very high swimming ability, it's really important to, you know, kind of know the conditions and, you know before you go.
Well, Riley, I really appreciate the time that you have given us this morning. I know you're busy with school and with waterman activities. And thank you for taking the time. I could talk to you for another couple of hours, and I wish that I could. I just, again, can't express my thanks and admiration for you and your partner and all of the crew that works for California State Parks Lifeguards. Thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. And just one other note, we do have our seasonal lifeguard tryouts on Saturday, March 18th at Dunes Beach at 9 a.m. And it consists of a 100-yard swim as well as a 400-yard swim, 200-yard run.
And this is for the lifeguards, not for the junior guards.
Yeah, this is for to become a seasonal state parks lifeguard.
Mm-hmm.
And interviews will follow after that.
And can you give us the date and place again?
Yeah, so it's Saturday, March 18th at Dunes Beach at 9 a.m.
Great.
Yeah, and we'll post it on our Instagram as well to get that out there as well. But if you're interested, March 18th at Dunes Beach.
Okay, thank you so much. Listeners, this has been Riley Rhodes, California State Parks lifeguard, literal lifesaver, and incredible citizen. Thank you, Riley, for the time today, and good luck on your career and lifeguarding.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Riley. Bye-bye. Okay, that I got to take a breath and wipe away a little tear out of my eye. I mean, that was just so impressive. You come across people in your life and you're like, you know what, I wish I could be like that. Well, this is a person that I wish I could be more like. For Coastliners, I've lived here 20 years. I have to live next to the ocean. It's a draw to me. I love it. I have literally not been into the ocean above my knees since I've lived here. It's not because I'm scared of the ocean. I love it. I love being around it. I don't like being cold. Okay, so that's the level of weenie that I am at. And then there's Riley, right? Which is, I'm at like her shoestring level. Okay, Riley and Max Hunter. I want to give a special thanks to the coastal butterfly, Michelle Dragony of Coastside Buzz, for helping me connect with Riley so we could set up this interview and hear firsthand this incredible story that apparently cannot be found anywhere else. All right, next week we'll have another riveting installment of Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. And when I say riveting, it will be riveting. We've got more great guests next week in our Shooting the Breeze live interview. We are going to have Jane Kim and Thayer Walker from Inkdwell Studios in Princeton talk about the new migrating mural project for the harbor. It's going to happen. Thank you, Coastsiders. We'll talk to you next week. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.